Hey, good morning. Andy's taking the day off today. Guess who's here? Barry Strands is back with us, and we're so happy to have Barry on. He's the champion. He's going to be here. He's the questions that we get on text and the phone line keeps you on your toes.
I love it. Yeah. It's really challenging. It's fun to be able to feel like you have to feel the question, process it, and then spit it back out on live radio. And I find myself going, oh, let's do that again. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you don't know what the question's going to be.
No. So there's a slight amount of terror that happens too. But you know what? Right. You're here. I figured you can answer those questions
even
if I can't.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Barry, as you know, if you're a regular listener of the show, you know that Barry knows his stuff. He's been in the business. All right. Let's just do the math. How many years? Exactly.
Oh, come on. Don't make me do that. 1972.
Okay.
So let's see. It was 28 years, and then it was 18.
Yeah, 40, it's twice.
It's like a long. A lot of them.
Yeah. You and they were just had hand tools.
Yes.
No power tools. It hasn't been quite that long. But Barry knows his stuff, and if you're a regular listener. So call us. Or send Barry a text if you happen to have any kind of a home improvement question. Ask Barry.
Hey, I just did the math. Yeah. 47 years.
47?
I was 15 when I started. I'm 62.
Yeah. I was 10 when I started.
Yeah. You're looking good, though.
Yeah, for 10.
Yep, it's fine.
1,000. It's a metric.
Right. Well, you know, we can answer any questions, at least attempt to. It's a fun part about being in the business that long is that you end up having had lots of opportunities to listen and learn. And I'm in the job world of construction, and I teach classes on construction. So you end up having chances to be involved in a lot of aspects of things. And then when somebody asks a question you don't have an answer to, then you're motivated to go look it up. So it ends up being something where even the questions you don't know the answer to become valuable. And then, of course, I have a house. So I work on that and then work in the business.
Yeah, again, like you mentioned, that you teach as well. So I guess being teachers or doctors or lawyers, you're always re-educating yourself, right? You're always learning new things, or you have
to. Well, for example, the 2018 International Residential Code we had thought might not get adopted by Minnesota. And in fact, they're going to go forward with the adoption. So in our teaching season this year, coming up in January, for professional education resources, proedresource.com, we will be involved in teaching the new code coming so that contractors are prepared for the changes.
Is that a lot of information for these people to absorb?
That's a really good question. And I find it fascinating, too, that most consumers that I talk to think that building code relates to contractors' lives. And certainly that's true, but they don't understand that the code relates to the house. True. As long as they have a house, then for goodness sakes, the code applies to their home and any work they would do on it. And so it's a much broader scope. Contractors should know the code. The challenge, of course, is if the code book's 1,000 pages long, which it is, there's 100 pages just on wall bracing.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you keep 100 track
pages.
Of that?
And that, you know, when it changed, we had separate classes just on how to handle the new wall bracing section of the building code.
Wow.
Because it was so dense, there were so many options. But they had to meet a criteria in that design. And it's things like wind shear. You build on the lake, and a lot of houses that we work on now for Kyle Hunt and Partners are built on Lake Minnetonka. And people want to have window glass running right up to the corner of the building so they can take advantage of a better lake view. Well, obviously, if you have no surface of plywood on a framed wall that can resist the wind pressure coming against that, that facility, that building can rack in the wind. It can twist. Mm. Well, we can't allow that. So we have to design something from an engineered standpoint that permits us to see the clip to the corner and still handle those wind pressures. And so steel frames normally get used in those kind of lake properties. But on a smaller scale residential build, nobody wants to spend money on steel like that. And as a result, they're trying to figure out how can I brace this so that it meets the code requirements so there's no deflection under wind pressures. At the same time, still maximize my views. And those then become challenges for everybody in the industry. So a builder needs to have a grasp on this, or they need to have, you know, on their speed dial an engineer.
Yes.
And the challenge, of course, is to have someone then who can consult for a reasonable fee. You have to build that consultation fee or that engineering fee back into your design. And sometimes homeowners look and say, well, I'll pay you for materials. I'll pay you, you know, for the installation of those. Yeah. But I don't want to pay for the design. And unfortunately, that becomes its own challenge.
Yeah, I bet.
Anyway.
All right. If you have a question for Barry, call it in or text it in. 651-989-9226 is the number. Text is 81807. You know, Barry, last time you were here, we started talking about the humidity levels in homes. Maybe we should back up a little bit.
Well, it's coming up right now. Everywhere I turn, we just finished up a home, and the house had gone through the summer cycle, and things were really damp inside the house. And so they had a separate dehumidifier in the lower level, a finished exercise area. And I came in a couple weeks ago, and the dehumidifier was still running, and I checked the humidistat on their furnace control, which is kind of a sophisticated smart system. And I looked at the house, and we're at 31%. And I'm like, whoa. And now we're beginning to see some of the woodwork that we've just installed 4 or 5 months ago going through a shrinking cycle, and we're seeing hairline cracking. And I said to the homeowner, I said, we got to shut this off. And she said, oh, I thought you wanted this to run all through the winter. I said, no. We just need to get down to an equilibrium. I said, the house will continue to dry out, but it's going to dry out by air leakage in through windows and doors, and we need to reach an equilibrium moisture level. We don't need to continue to run a dehumidifier. The house was calling for humidity based on the systems inside the home. At the same time, they were running a dehumidifier, taking that moisture out at the same time. Oh. So that's never ideal. So I had to clarify what I thought I'd been clear about, but evidently not, and then set that thing, shut it off, and park it someplace so that they can't easily turn it back on and help them to understand how that works. So, I mean, I get asked this question all the time, Denny. What's the right relative humidity to have inside a home in the winter? And the challenge, of course, is of all the research that's been done, the answer really is a range of humidity primarily related to the exterior air temperature. Okay, so if you got up this morning and took a shower, did you see any fog on your mirror? Did you see moisture on a window when you shower in the bathroom? Well, obviously what happens when we shower is we put a lot of humidity into the air.
Right.
So because that space is being humidified, the cold surfaces then tell us how much humidity can be handled before we end up taking that moisture from a vapor state, moving it into a liquid state, then it runs down our windows and makes a mess on our windowsills. So what we're saying about houses in general is the house needs to tolerate as much humidity in winter as possible before it creates a problem for the window surfaces themselves. And that has to do with the quality of the window glass. And I don't mean the glass surface so much, but the way in which the glass panel on a window is installed. So back in the day, we had single pane glass in storms. And then we went to thermally sealed glass, and that's typical, where we have a sealed glass panel. And now some of our windows are going to be getting a third pane of sealed glass, a triple glazed window. And some of them are two glazed surfaces of glass, and then there's a plastic interpane called heat mirror. And that goes in between the glass. These air spaces within the glass create a different ability of the inner glass panel to maintain a higher temperature relative to what the outside air temperature is doing. Now, I'm picturing this in my mind as I'm talking. I'm watching your face going, am I being clear here? Listeners out there going, what is he talking about? But the difference means this. The temperature of the inside glass surface dictates how much moisture can be inside the home without condensation on the glass causing problems.
Okay.
All right. Now, your hardwood floor would like to have a stable relative humidity of about 45% year-round. But if you go to 45% when it's 12 degrees below zero outside in the middle of a January, a cold snap, your windows are going to be actually covered with frost on that bottom inch and a half or so. Because your house can't tolerate that much humidity. Your windows can't tolerate it. The wood loves it, but the windows don't. And so what we try to explain to people is that as temperatures decrease, the humidity level inside your home has to go down too, for those windows not to freak out with excess moisture. We built a brand new home. We had a cold snap. It dropped 16, 17 degrees over the weekend. I got a phone call on Monday morning, and the homeowner said, our windows, I'm having to mop them up. And I'm like, here's the only question I care about. Is there ice forming on them? No ice. Okay, then we're not in terrible condition, but we've got to dry the house out. And he said, well, it's at 37%. I said, 37% would be fine if we were at 22 degrees. But at 12 below zero, we've got to get our humidities down to 25 to 27%. And that's like, well, that's terribly dry. Yes. Yes, it is. But we're only talking about a few days. Now, there's sophisticated enough equipment in heating, ventilation, air conditioning that we can actually put in a thermostat that tells the humidifier and it tells an air exchange system, and it tells the furnace how much to operate. and what systems are actually moving. So are we humidifying or are we ventilating and therefore dehumidifying? And that system then allows the house to self-regulate. Most homes built before, let's say, 2000 or 2010, or even new homes today that are, let's say, entry level, they're not going to have that kind of smart stat in place. So that must be manually manipulated by the homeowner. And that's a problem because most folks don't know how to set their an April air, for example, humidification system. They don't know what to do with that. And if they've got an air exchange system, they don't know what that little dial is down in the mechanical room in the first place. But when we use a smart stat, we can simply set the house where the windows can tolerate as much moisture as possible. It self-regulates. And then we end up having homes that just find the right number by themselves without the homeowner having to do the math. And so that's what we're looking for. Here's the real reality. When you get into super cold temperatures, you're either going to make your windows unhappy and they'll condense, or you're going to make wood surfaces inside the home, hardwood floors, piano, soundboards, for example. They almost always, if you've got a nice Steinway, you've already got a humidification system that is sitting there typically on the base of that piano plugged into a wall where we're feeding moisture to the soundboard so it doesn't crack. And that's a localized humidity level that we're trying to create inside the home for the piano soundboard. And typically they're going for a 45%, 47%, something like that for the piano. But if there's that much humidity up against a glass surface, you're going to have excess condensation. You'll be wiping, you'll be mopping, you'll be creating a constant need to drain those down. So we've got to dehumidify. And the quickest way to dehumidify a house, any idea what that is?
A dehumidifier.
No. Good guess, though.
And
fastest way to dehumidify a house, Danny.
Oh, wait a minute. We talked about that.
I did. I told you this one time before. Can you remember what the answer was? Hey, everybody, his face is getting that kind of pink little flush in his cheeks, which makes me feel like it's winter, too. But he's pensively thinking.
Heat.
Yeah, open the windows.
That's right.
Open the windows. Fastest way to dehumidify a home is to open the windows.
What about fans?
Fans are going to circulate the air that's inside the home.
I'm thinking like bathroom fans.
Yep, and that'll suck moisture. That's going to make more sense than opening up a window.
Yeah. Okay.
So turn the bath fan on, let it run, watch humidity levels. And then if you haven't got a humidistat, you can pick one of those up. A little Accurite.
They're not expensive, are they?
Yeah, $9 from a big box, orange big box store.
All right. We have more show to come. If you want to ask a home improvement question of Barry Strand, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. We'll pick up on both when we come back. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, 22 degrees now. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our home improvement show presented every week by our friends at Lindus Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. You want to get in touch with those folks? 1-800-LEAF-GUARD. Andy is taking the day off today. Our friend Barry Strands is back filling in for Andy. Glad Barry is back. Now, we were talking about the humidity levels in homes. We don't have to continue to talk about
that. Anything.
We'll take whatever
paint
question.
Or, yeah, we can talk about anything. Finishing your basement.
Any kind of construction question
anything.
You may have. In fact, let's Jerry in St. Paul has been waiting on the horn here. Jerry, what's your question for Barry?
Barry, this is going to be a tough one for you. I live in a 1914 home. It was moved to its present location in 1940. I've got a three-season porch. I've got the cement, the wavy block columns in front. And the porch was always moving from summer to winter. So I hired a contractor. He put in footings with triple 2x10 supporting the porch. And then we put a dozen 4x4 posts evenly distributed across the porch and put new aluminum storm windows on. The storm door was reinstalled, everything was level and plumb, and now 2 months later, I can't close the storm door all the way, and the storm windows are not in perfect alignment anymore. You can see gaps.
Sure.
So do I need a structural engineer, or can you tell me what's going on?
Well, I can't tell you for sure what's taking place. I can tell you that something obviously is moving, and the challenge is to identify what is moving, what's going on. Now, remember that anytime you put in something new, new footings into a space, you're going to get some settling. That's just going to happen. There's no way around that. The bigger question to me is what the soils were that the footings were placed upon. Is there a clay-based soil, a combination of the large amount of water that we've had this fall is going to create likely some settling taking place. Now, a laser level would be able to tell you what's been taking place. I'd bring the contractor back out, and I'd say, I just need to understand what's going on here and see if they can't shoot that in with the laser and determine if a corner has dropped Normally, if the whole thing is dropping at the same level, we don't have a problem. We don't see what you're experiencing. So you've got a corner or you've got two locations dropping that are creating this differential, this twist, I sometimes call it a racking effect. What can be done, obviously, is to understand what the problem is. You're just going to be putting money down a waste place if we don't understand what the real problem is. That's the first step to identify. Once that's determined, then the question is, do we adjust relative to the footings? My guess is that you can take the existing footings, jack the structure that you built up, and then put a shim system underneath that and get it back to level again, which wouldn't be terribly complicated. Now, in northern Minnesota, guys have built decks that mm-hmm. didn't get down deep enough, lift the footings on a regular basis. And one guy in class I had, he said, well, Barry, up north, that happens all the time. I said, so how do you handle this? Well, we have these 6x6 posts on top of our concrete footings, and every time it gets jacked up in the air, we come back in the summer and we cut our 6x6 post off and drop it back down again. I said, you're doing that every year? He said, yeah, I'm doing that every year. But, you know, that's just normal up here. And I said, that's crazy. I said, at some point, you run out of, you know, wood posts to cut, don't you? He goes, yeah, then you just dig a new footing, start all over again.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, you're making this up. You're jerking my chain. He's like, no, I'm telling you.
They actually did that.
This is how it is done in those really, really challenging soils.
What a story. Thanks, Jerry. Yeah. Appreciate the call. Texter, and by the way, if you want to send your home improvement question to Barry by text, 81807. Can asphalt shingles be applied now in winter because of damage from a tornado? That comes from George.
Well, I tell George, yes, they can be applied in winter. Now, the challenge is to understand how warm or temperate it needs to be. Is there sun? Are we doing a whole roof surface? A good roofing crew today can be in and out of the house's roof surface in a day. And they'll, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys in some cases. But they'll be there quickly. The biggest challenge is to note that if you have temperatures down about below 20 degrees Fahrenheit, you're risking the installation procedure. What will happen is there's no seal on the back of the shingle. There's an adhesive strip. It will not bond to the preceding shingle because it's too cold. And so when we install those, some guys in winter conditions will glue them. Now, most crews will charge you more to do that. They don't want to glue them in a winter condition. So we wait till a really hot summer day or even late spring, maybe it's a May day, and we get enough solar radiation on that they bond. But the risk is that we have to wait through the winter months without bonding taking place. Then a heavy windstorm might peel some of those shingles, or there might be some loss as a result. So it isn't ideal to install in cold conditions, but it is possible.
All right. We need to take a break, Barry. We'll have more show to come here. Andy Lind is taking the day off today. Barry Strand's filling in for Andy. 22 degrees. In fact, we'll have a look at that forecast coming up.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And good morning. Welcome back to our home improvement show presented by our friends at Linda's Construction. Andy's off today. In his stead is Barry Strands, who knows his stuff if you've been familiar with the show and hear Barry from time to time here. If you want to ask Barry your home improvement question, whatever that may be, we were talking about humidity earlier.
Yeah, anything.
651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Here is a text, Barry, that came in a bit ago. Is there anything that can be done for an air duct that, quote, bangs each time it heats up or cools down as the furnace or air conditioner cycles on and off? Have you ever heard of that issue?
Oh, sure, yeah. Real common, actually. The question is how that duct was installed. Now, most HVAC contractors today will score the surface of a duct. Typically, they've got pre-bent into a section of duct chase an angle that's designed to allow expansion contraction, because when the heat first hits that duct, it's going to expand. And if it's tightly installed so there's no flexible movement, you'll hear that twisting of shape and it comes across as a banging. Sometimes what installers will do is they will pull the attachment brackets off the ceiling and then they will throw in a gasket of some type right there so that these basically have a little bit more suspension and a little bit more freedom to move. And that's a simple way to handle this. So we just back out the screws, put this gasket in place, screw it back in place, and that gives us enough room to move. Sometimes they'll come back in with a screwdriver and actually cross, strike the surface of the metal. That will give the metal a lot more potential for movement within it so that it doesn't have the same rigidity, and that can work as well. It depends on the thickness and the gauge of the duct, of course, but those are some options that are available.
Mm-hmm. Huh, interesting. 651-989-9226 is the number. Text is 81807. The text says this, the corner of my garage floor has cracked and crumbled in due to water erosion outside that has been repaired. Can I repair the floor or will I need a new floor? It's about 1 square foot of that area. We have in-floor heat.
In the garage, we have in-floor heat. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I think that you could do a topical compound in that application. There's a number of products that are available at the big box stores that are designed to go over a surface. The challenge is to feather them down to nothing so that they meet the other surface of the floor. If you have one that's dropped straight down, you've got an inch thickness all the way across. But typically what you've got is a piece that's pitched. And so now you've got to go something that's an inch all the way to maybe a quarter of an inch at the point of the break or the point of the separation. And that thin surface can peel. So getting a good bond is everything. But yeah, I think so. I think that would be one where that's certainly going to be a much more effective option. But bigger question is to make sure that we don't have something taking place that's a problem with the tubes that might be in the concrete, if it's a water system or if it's electrical resistance cable, that we don't have a short or that we don't have a burst in the pipe or something like that. So before I did any repair, I want to pay real careful
that's
attention to how my system was working.
In-floor heat in the garage.
It's
love
nice.
That.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. We were talking again about humidity levels earlier in the show. Texter says, what was the name of the device to control the humidity that was just mentioned? That was a bit ago.
A humidistat. And
yeah.
There are a number of systems that are available, but there's an inexpensive one that we use frequently that you can get at the big box store. It's made by a company called Accuride. And so in the garden department, the last time I picked one up.
Mm.
But the challenge is to recognize that they're accurate to within the quality of the piece. And so if you really want to know a specific humidity level, you can just simply bring out an HVAC contractor. They use a Sling hygrometer to actually check moisture levels to get really accurate. But the more sophisticated tools that are there, they get much more expensive. So you're going to be spending $80 to $100 for something to really determine or get dialed in the actual humidity that's going to give you a 3 to 4% differential range.
Let's go back to the phones. By the way, there is a line open if you want to use it to ask your home improvement question. A very 651-989-9226. Let's go to Hudson. Jerry is there. Jerry, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
We have a 25-year-old house, and we live in a rural development in Hudson, and it's heavily wooded. The house is a split-entry sort of country look with the woodwork is what's called nutmeg, I think, the finish, and there's a lot of it. Not my style, but we worked with it. The problem is we want to redo the bathrooms.
Okay.
And the shower surrounds are in good shape, and they put almond in the two big bathrooms. They don't even make it anymore. I don't want to rip out the shower to replace one, and they're in good condition. So how do you handle this? This can't, you know, be, this must happen in a lot of the homes our age where you have the almond fixtures and are kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, the question is, you know, if there's a tight budget, then you're looking for something that would go over the surface of what you have. And there are liners that can be used on a tub and shower surround that would be effective, that could be glued onto the surfaces. I just don't know if that's going to be aesthetically pleasing or not. That's an option. So when you think about all the fixtures in the bathroom, changing the colors on all those, you know, you're going to spend a little bit of money to make that change. But it depends on how far, it's all about dollars in this case and how far you want to take that. And difficult to answer because I just need to know a little bit more information.
That help you, Jerry?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just such a – well, if we replace it, it's a really big project to – come in with sledgehammers and remove this. And like I said, and the reason I mentioned the house and the woodwork is because we still have to blend with that, you know, and to really make a change. So I didn't know if there are some smarter options I hadn't thought of.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at the tub specifically?
Well, the whole shower surround.
Okay.
It's high fiberglass. I mean, it's in good condition.
Sure.
So I was looking for options to deal with the woodwork we have.
Right.
They'll update the bathroom, the floor, and the kitchen. I mean, the sink and cabinet and stuff.
Well, without replacing, paint is your easiest option. You can go into the tub and you can drop a liner right in over the existing tub surface. And there are paints that are electrostatically charged that can work on a toilet, it can work on a sink, and those can be painted. That's a lower cost option. But in my opinion, the question is, can we walk through that bathroom door and then allow that room to look different? The impact on matching the existing home, that becomes the question mark in my mind. I see a lot of houses where when you come through a look that's somewhat dated, we can still move into an updated bathroom space, and most folks won't react to that. And if it's for resale, my idea is simply to minimize your investment. But if it's for your own, you know, joy, then I would look at spending enough money to go, this is how I want it to look for my life to be lived in. And I don't know, people go waste lots of money in Vegas and don't think twice about it because it's a vacation. But sometimes if we don't get it back on the investment in our homes, we feel like we've been cheated. And I'm thinking life is way too short to look at it through that lens. I like the lens of going, what do I want to feel when I walk into the space?
Yeah, good point.
And in my mind, that's a much more important life choice decision. I can't think of anything besides putting a liner or topical surfaces. You can go to a home improvement center and see liners that can go on the tub surface. But in terms of the toilet and in terms of the lavatory, I would replace those. I mean, you can buy a decent white toilet for $100.
Yeah.
And you can look at a lavatory and change out that vanity for, you know, $149 for both the top and the vanity. And they're decent. They're not great, but they would fit the scale of that house as Jerry's described it.
All right. Well, good luck, Jerry. We have to take a break. We have more show to come. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, 651-989-9226 or send a text, 81807. We'll be back with more home improvement on News Talk 830 WCCO, 22 degrees. Light snow still reported here in the Twin Cities, 22 degrees. Our temperature reading, Denny Long with Barry Strands, filling in for Andy today. And I'm thinking, Barry, I know you have, with your family, we're going to have a little Thanksgiving.
Gathering,
yes.
Food.
And
fun. Football.
And you and I were just briefly talking about touch-ups. Now, if there's some items, drywall, whatever the case may be,
sure,
in your home, and you have some guests coming over, you want to spruce it up a little.
Okay, get this. On Tuesday this week, I took out a stackable washer dryer.
Oh, yeah.
And relocated the ductwork behind it, brought the drywall contractor in, who put the drywall in it, patched it that afternoon. The next morning, we painted and sanded it, and by middle of the day, had the stackable washer dryer back in place.
Listen to you.
Now, listen to me. Here's what I want to tell people. Some of people are listening and going, I've got that thing. I'm going to end up putting art over it. I'm going to end up putting some furniture in front of it,
yeah,
because that doorknob hit this location, made a mess, and I don't want anybody looking at that. I just want to remind people that today we have technology in drywall joint compounds. They come dry in bags at a big box store. There's a thing called 5-minute joint compound, which means you mix it up in a pan, you smear it inside that hole, tape it, and in 5 minutes it's set up and you can hit a second coat. And normally it's 10 to 15. But that means you can put 3 coats of joint compound on a surface in a matter of a couple of hours. Now, you shouldn't sand it that day, but the next day it all cures out. Somebody could be doing this yet this weekend and then sand it on Monday and paint it. And well before the holiday gathering,
yeah,
you've got a repair taken care of. I just don't know if most folks are aware that today's technology with joint compounds has changed so dramatically. We don't need to go through a 1 coat dry, 2 coat dry, 3 coat dry process the way we once did, which meant that drywall repairs took 3 or 4 days. They can be done in a day.
Interesting. Say, speaking of that, there was a text that came in kind of related. Seams texture says, all newer homes in the metro sheetrocked garages with a poorly applied application of joint compound. Is there a reason they aren't finished like the interior walls?
Sure. The reason is the code doesn't require us to finish the garage. What's often perceived as code is that we have to do what's called fire tape. And most, well, the code doesn't say that, but most building officials think that that's required. So we do just a bare bones coat of tape on the surface, and then we're done. That's not supposed to be a finished area. It's done for fire protection, not for cosmetics.
All right. Interesting. Purchased a home a few months back, texter says. One of my outside freezeless hydrants has a hot-cold mixer valve. Why would one need hot water through a garden hose? Well, I've never seen that.
Yeah, me neither. But certainly somebody was thinking that they would maybe be washing something.
Yeah,
they would,
true.
You know, that's the only thing that comes to my mind. There's certainly nothing wrong with that, but I've never seen it either. But certainly, why not have warm water outside? It's just a matter of changing the valving when you install the system, changing the piping. And if you do that, then you don't have to worry about cold hands when you wash your car.
How about that?
Could happen. Or maybe you're washing the dog. But, you know, in the houses that we build, we create a dog washing station in the garage.
Listen.
And it's got a full ceramic tile with inlaid color, and the dog sits in that space. It's hot and cold tap.
Goodness.
It's like, it's crazy, but it's very cool.
Why? All right, let's go back. I tell you what, let's go to the phones.
Sure.
See Jill in Cannon Falls has called in. Jill, what is your question for Barry?
My question is, my house is about 16 years old. We built it. But I've noticed, like, on some corners, where the drywall, the tape has come up a little bit.
So sure.
But I don't know how to make it go back down. Do you glue it? What do you do?
Well, drywall tape that's peeled typically didn't have enough joint compound underneath it when it was first installed. That happens as houses dry and move. We tell people that the solution is actually to replace the tape. Pull it out of there and start over again with that tape surface. And nobody likes to hear that, but that's the right way to do it. Trying to get something back behind that, taping it and then patching and then dealing with a little crack that you see there, it's an ongoing problem that you can't resolve. So I say cut it out. It's a utility knife and then some careful work. Cut it out and then reinstall the tape. Yep.
I mean, can people still use spackling compound?
Yeah, spackling compounds used in painter touch-ups all the time. So we're looking for something that will dry quickly. And a lot of times today there's colored spackle where it starts out purple and then when it cures it's white so that you know it's dry. Mm-hmm. And it can be sanded out to the touch and then hit. But you're looking for something that will build quickly volume and not have much shrinkage because your goal is to not have to have that go through drying process. But we get painters come in and do this all the time. They bring a hair dryer with them. Hair dryer is standard practice in drywall repair.
How about that?
Because they're going to speed cure the surface.
Sure.
So
why not?
With a second coat. And then once it's dried, they'll do a touch sand and then they'll paint.
Here's a text, Barry. Why is our air exchanger wired to the furnace fan in our new home? When the exchanger turns on, the furnace fan does too. Our previous home, the air exchanger ran by itself. Can I rewire it to run by itself?
Well, when you link a system like that, normally you have smart controls. So that means that, yes, we're not asking the air exchanger's fans to blow air through the house. We're using the blower motor of the furnace to drive that air. Typically in a larger home, which is typical, we end up needing the fan power of the furnace blower motor to drive the fresh air through the home. I think that the system that is being described is just fine. I wouldn't modify it. I think that I always tell people, run your fan on your furnace on all the time anyway.
Turn I've heard that for years.
You know, and if you do that,
what is the reason for that?
The reason is we get a balanced movement of moisture, humidity, and even things like odors. It's just a much, much more efficient way for the house to maintain equilibrium levels of both humidity and temperature.
There's no real dead spots then.
Right. Otherwise, you've got spots that will get moist or more moist, bathrooms, kitchens, et cetera. And you'll have spots that might be hot spots inside the home based on solar radiation coming in the afternoon and the sun. So you end up getting a much more efficient blend of consistent temperature and humidity levels. I think it's a really brilliant idea.
We, as you know, have smart listeners, Barry, and they come up with some suggestions, and we appreciate that. Texter says this about the bathroom question just minutes ago. The lady that called about the bathroom should call a surface specialist. They can paint a tub any color, much cheaper, and it lasts.
Yeah, electrostatic painting or painting surfaces, they make sense. The question is, how about the surround?
Yeah,
can that material be painted? And I thought about that, and my answer would be probably. But mostly we're painting metal surfaces. The fiberglass paints, they're going to be okay. They're just not going to be a long-term solution. I think they're 3 to 5 years.
There's a comment about the home that had hot and cold water on their garden hose faucet.
Sure.
Texter says, I have horses, and warm water would be marvelous for filling the water tanks.
Well, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
I would love to have horses.
That's a whole
I could exchange design. Some children. No. I love all my kids,
sure
who also love horses, by the way.
Well, as we started the show, Barry, for those that joined us a little bit late, we were talking about the humidity levels in home. What exactly were the various things that impact humidity in a home?
Well, that's a great question, Denny. What's crazy about that is that one of the things that creates humidity is your own body.
That's true.
One third of the humidity in the average home is caused by the occupant's breathing. So we don't really think that our breath is putting humidity into the air, but it does. So the number of occupants inside a home will impact humidity levels. Now, I've got 11 kids. So 13 of us living there, you know, we are creating humidity. But one of the things that loses humidity in a home is leaking windows and doors. So older windows and doors are a way to dehumidify the building. So then fans create it, or actually remove it, mm-hmm. but systems create it. So hot tub, fish tanks. One guy was raising saltwater fish in a basement, and he created so much humidity that the house was getting mold.
Wow.
And it's like, well, you know, you have to understand your sources. Green plants, another humidity source. Nice. You're about to give me the signal that we're going to give out.
We're getting the hook.
Okay, all right. Good. Sorry. I can stop talking, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your wonderful
and
family.
And to you,
Barry.
Too, Danny.
Thanks, Barry. Barry Strands. We'll see Barry down the road again, I'm sure, filling in for Andy Lindis.